Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. We are live out at Five Iron Golf in Midtown here in Nashville. It's Masters Thursday. We got people out here taking some hacks, taking some swings. Life is good out here on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Life is even better now because we head to our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and welcome in our buddy Charles Robinson to the program from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
A remote appearance. Is that right?
That's right. You nailed it.
listen to his voice, too, booming through this place.
We're trying to get Rex Road out there on the simulator. We're going to see how that goes a little bit later.
Joe, what was your last score for 18?
Oh, I have no clue.
I have no idea.
170?
I don't keep score. I mean, it's not even a thing. I have no idea. But you know what I think we should do is we should get Charles to tell the people of his rant for me as he texted me as I'm trying to cover the national championship game Monday night, just absolutely losing his crap to the point where I finally just sent him a picture of the net and said, "This one's for you, Charles."
Were you not a huge fan of Michigan winning the national championship?
I wasn't doing well. I was not doing well. There's a lot of years that came out, a lot of years of frustration that came out in that moment. I had no idea how much it was going to affect me. And, it was less than ideal to see that Dusty May, after 2 years, winning a national title. And, you know, Joe and I mean, we covered Izzo's title, 26 years ago? And I thought to myself, he's going to win a lot of titles, or at least there's going to be a second one at some point. He'll get the Dean Smith title at some point. That hasn't happened. And I've been very, very frustrated. I told Joe, I said, I will personally pay for his plane fare to fly to Europe and actually find a basketball player. This tournament, I was so frustrated to see the number of college basketball teams that found European players, and yet Tom Izzo can't seem to dig up even one for his program. But yeah, it was.
Michigan won the championship without a European player. No, I guess that's
Mara. I mean, yeah, come on. I mean, let's.
I mean, we don't have. We could go back and forth on this forever, but he did get four guys in the portal last year. Like they had a top 10 team, went to the Elite Eight last year, Sweet 16 this year. I mean, can you appreciate what you have, Charles?
Can you appreciate what you have? Have won a national championship in 26 years.
That is true.
Thank you. That's why you play the game. Problem. That's why you do it, right? As I told Joe, I think at some point in that rant, I'm tired of counting the Final Fours and the Sweet 16s and. It's been 26 years. Let's.
I agree. College basketball is the only sport where we're just like, yeah, they almost won. Love it.
Yeah, that's like such a celebration. Where else do we like the NFL? I don't hear teams that are like, hey.
If you made a Super Bowl, you talk about it.
like it's this great thing. I constantly make the playoffs. I mean, Pittsburgh Steelers wanted
like it. We talk about the Titans making the AFC Championship game. That's a thing you talk about, right?
If that's really honestly the bar, come on.
I don't think it's not the bar, but I mean
Mike Borgonzi sitting there going like, let's make a conference title game. That's really, we'll hang that banner. Yeah,
Joe's just upset now that I took a shot at college basketball.
No, I mean, just saying. Like, I mean, there's still there's consistent winning still means something. I would think, but
we'll see.
Ring culture. You guys are all in on ring culture. That's fine. Charles Barkley was a very good player. He didn't win a ring.
Yeah. I don't think college sports. I think you got to win it. I think this whole idea of making the playoffs in college football or make it to Sweet 16 in basketball, I think that's over. Like, I don't think people care anymore. I really don't.
That means a lot of miserable-ass people. I mean, if it's win it or there you had no value, then that's misery.
Joe, you covered the SEC forever. Like, that's a lot of miserable-ass people.
I agree. I've seen Tennessee fans when they had a dysfunctional joke of a program, and I've seen them when they had a team that made the playoff and like one big game to beat Alabama. I see a difference. I think there's a little bit of a difference in the two things.
But it takes having the joke of a program to then feel like winning is enough for you. Like, it's I don't know. Anyway, can we move on?
It's an interesting discussion.
NFL.
you need to be happier in life. That's the takeaway.
All right. So we were just talking about this, Charles. The Cowboys have two first-round picks. Kansas City's got two first-round picks now, too. But Dallas, we saw them trade away Micah Parsons a year ago. There are some, to me, very intriguing pass rushers at the top of this draft. And the Cowboys, conceivably, have the ammunition to move up in it if they want to do it. So how much are you when we talk about potential movement in the draft coming up in a couple of weeks, are the Cowboys maybe the first team that come to mind for you?
I think they're an exciting team in the NFL draft. I mean, you look at the fan base and particularly how they're talking about this draft at number 12. They're very excited about potentially getting Sonny Styles, at that 12th overall pick. I don't know that Sonny Styles will make it that long in the draft, but I think what's exciting about the Cowboys is they realistically could do anything in this draft. I mean, we've talked about on the podcast with, Frank Schwab and I were talking about the fact that they could package the 12 and 20 and move up. I mean, there's no doubt they could absolutely move up in this draft. If there's any team that, kind of has the impetus to do it, it's the Cowboys. They could potentially take that number 12. They could slide back and try to add more capital in the 2027 NFL draft. They're probably as wide open as any, team in this draft. And I think a lot of people will be watching, what they could do. And here's the thing too, with that 12 and 20, I know a lot of people are, you're expecting they're going to spend it on defense. They're going to, they're absolutely going to, blow both picks to try and improve that side of the ball. But, long-term, the horizon with George Pickens, like I get that a lot of people think that George Pickens is probably going to end up, signing a long-term deal there. I don't know if that's the case. It's not completely out of the realm of possibility that they spend one of those picks on a wide receiver that, we're still trying to figure out how the wide receiver stack will end up in this draft. And personally, I would love, that's like the one spot where I'm like, just imagine if you could take, let's say Jeremiah Love makes it to 12. That's not going to happen, right? But just imagine if they packaged those two picks and moved up and drafted like a Jeremiah Love, the needle mover that would be on draft day. I mean, they're going to be a really, really, really interesting team to watch because they could, they could spend those picks on almost any player. They could absolutely be the one team that I think, packages their two first rounders to move up, whether it's for, an edge player, whether it's for, a high end offensive player, whether it's for, pretty much, anything. I think to get in the, and I think the 12 and the 20 you could get in this draft where a lot of teams, I think would be open to moving, especially outside of the top four picks. You could probably, package that 12 and 20 and get into the top 5, 6, 7 range, and make a move. So, Dallas will be one of those teams that, and not only that, I think Jerry Jones, realistically, I know we always talk about every offseason about how motivated he is, but I really truly believe that he is showcasing at least this offseason that he's really feeling pressed to make something happen with the Cowboys and I do think Jerry, I hate to talk in these terms, I do think Jerry feels his age. and I do feel like he thinks there is sort of a clock on what's going on with his football team, and I think he's motivated when it comes to these draft picks. So it's going to be a fun team to watch, I think, when draft day shows up.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. I mean, I feel like he's had urgency. It's just making bad choices, right? I mean, that's a fair point to make. Staying in the state of Texas where you live, in fact, going to your city, so the Texans picking up C.J. Stroud's option, but, like, from what you know, Charles, is there real doubt or you know, are there people in that organization who are not sure or questioning whether he is going to be what they hoped he would be when they drafted him, what they thought for sure he was, you know, after a year?
You know, I personally think that it's – yeah. It's – I'll put it this way. I felt like when they entered this offseason, my argument was you can't extend this guy. Like, you need to see more. It's one thing to pick up his fifth-year option. It's another to extend him, particularly with what quarterback extensions now cost in the NFL. Like, what are you going to extend C.J. Stroud at? You know, is he a $50 million a year quarterback? Is he a $55 million a year quarterback? Is he a $60 million? Every agent will tell you, if you have a quarterback who's in the top 10, okay, well, that's a bar setter. Like, you try to get $65 million a year. That's just sort of how it goes. I think I've been a little bit surprised when you talk to people in the organization, and it's I will say that you know, with Caserio running that team, it's definitely tightened. Like, it's become a little more Patriots-like in terms of, you know, information, people willing to have honest discussions about the roster. But if you get anybody to talk to you, that will tell you that, like, C.J. Stroud, they believe that he's worthy of this extension. I felt like coming into this offseason, I was like, no, you can't extend him at this point. Like, you need to get another piece of, or at least another year of information. You know, fine, pay him the fifth year option, but, you know, he's not a guy that I think you extend long term. I don't think they agree inside the organization. I think they feel like they've got to get a deal done with him. I just don't know what that looks like. I don't know. Like, the quarterback money to me, and particularly this offseason, when you look at what happened with Tua, right? He feels it's not that extreme. You know, Tua, obviously, with the concussion issues in Miami, I think when they did that extension, everyone was looking at it saying the amount of risk on the books when you've got a guy who's got a concussion, you know, history, his arm's not, you know, his arm's okay. Like, there were a lot of underlying factors that made you question why you would extend him if you're Miami. I don't think it's that extreme with C.J. Stroud in Houston, but he has not lived up. He had that rookie season, and there was this idea that, you know, he's going to transform into a top five, top six quarterback in the league, and that hasn't happened. Now, it's not completely his fault. The offensive line fell apart entirely. I think they had issues at offensive coordinator that they did not expect to develop that did. You know, I think from the skill position standpoint, you know, Tank Dell suffering the catastrophic injury he did last year really, really, you know, hurt C.J. Stroud. But just this idea, I don't know how you can do the extension, but they're serious. This offseason, they're going to press to try and get the deal done, because I think they feel like, you know, quarterback deals are only going north. And but I'll ask you guys, what C.J. Stroud extension would you be comfortable with? Like, like imagine him as a $60 million a year quarterback. Does that make sense to you? Because I live here. There's no way that makes sense to me right now.
No, but it reminds me a lot of Trevor Lawrence, right? Where you could definitely do worse. You could definitely I still think maybe there's a little more upside with Stroud, but it's just maybe because it's just been less time. But it's sort of the same thing. It's like,
you think he's really on Trevor Lawrence's level?
Really,
Do you think he's on Trevor Lawrence's level?
Well, I mean, I think maybe last year Lawrence was better, but I mean, it reminds me of it just in terms of it's the same conversation of, man, he is not worth that money, but also, are we really going to go in the wilderness, you know, and not pay this? That's
100%. That's always the argument. Like, what's the alternative? Don't you have to start to kind of look at that now, though? I mean, think of the Kirk Cousins deal in Atlanta, the Tua deal, the Russell Wilson deal in Denver. I mean, this whole idea of like, well, where else will we go? I don't know, man. Maybe it's okay to say, okay, maybe we have a quarterback, maybe we don't, you know, okay, we think he's at this point, he's played himself into, you know, what he's like upper half, right? Upper one half of the league. Do you have to pay that guy? I hear you, Joe. You're right. That's what most general managers, they're like, well, where else am I going to go? What other quarterback am I going to get? I've seen I feel like we're starting to see the mistakes of that thinking. And like at what point does it change? I don't, the problem is with general managers is their shelf life is so short lived that it's like, I might as well spend the money because if I'm not here, you know, what's the difference? You know, I'm spending someone else's money if I'm going to get fired anyway. I almost think like NFL ownership needs to start talking to GMs and saying, look, you can't have that mentality. Like, it's okay. If you're going to make a mistake, let's not make it at the quarterback position. We're going to be strapped with having this quarterback making a ton of money. I mean, look at Philadelphia. Like, Philly's won a Super Bowl with Jalen Hurts. And yet every offseason, it feels like he's going to be a conversation. Every offseason, we're going to be talking about, like, what kind of leader is he? You know, why can't he throw over the middle of the field? Like, what, you know, what about his wide, you know, he and A.J. Brown? Like, is this a mismatch? Like, I don't know what corrective measure ever really happens at this point. But there is definitely a problem, I think, with GMs having – the shelf life that's so short that they just spend money and they sign the quarterbacks because they feel like they have no other option. But we're starting to see, go stare at the quarterback money in the top like 7 or 8 quarterbacks. I mean, go top 10.
Yeah.
You're going to feel uncomfortable with like, you know, more of those deals than you should be. And yet that's kind of where the NFL is with the quarterback position. Like, you just sign him. If it's a guy who's top half of the league, you try to extend him. And but man, when the money's 50 plus million dollars right now, there's a lot of $50+ million quarterbacks where you're like, I don't think those guys have really lived up to the, you know, billing, and yet you see teams continue to sign him. And I think Houston's kind of in that position. I am of the mind where I'm like, play him out. You know, you've got a franchise tag. If you have to put that into play and then pay him more down the line, go ahead and do it, because you need to see realistically whether or not, you know, C.J. Stroud is that rookie year guy, or if he's the kind of middling, maybe he's a, you know, 16th, 15th, 14th best quarterback in the league. And I don't think you pay those guys $60 million.
So, Charles, we've talked a lot, you know, speaking of quarterbacks, on the Cam Ward front this week, and the point I've made, you know, a lot of people are focusing in on, you know, the weapons or maybe lack thereof that he's got on offense right now, and we'll see whether or not they draft Jeremiah Love, because obviously that would help. But, you know, one of the points I've made is, what, you drafted this guy number one overall last year. Like, he should be, you know, the tide that raises all boats, right? Like, he should be the one elevating some of these people. And I'm just curious, from your perspective as somebody who watched him in year one, knows all the problems that were involved with it that we talked about a lot, whether it was his play individually or the coaching things and the changes and the roster and all those things, heading into year two with a completely different coaching staff, how do you, looking at this situation, feel about Cam Ward heading into year two, independent of all that other stuff of, you know, the roster and where things stand?
Can you I'll ask you this. Can you really, you know, you ask about it independent of the roster. Like, there's quarterback situations where you get guys and the offensive line does not protect them adequately, or the skill position players are not what they need to be. How do you, and I'm asking you this seriously, how do you grade those guys? You know, how do you really do analysis on quarterbacks when you sit there and go, well, could we have protected him better? Sure. Yep. You know, did he have the skill position pieces that we really would like to allow him to showcase everything he's got? No. So then how do you grade him? Like, how do you, like, you and I watched. I mean, there were times where I think some of the criticism of him coming out as a collegiate player definitely showed up, right? Like, he does want to make a big play. There are times where, you know, was he always adequately protected? No. But at times, did he put himself in harm's way? Yes. But he also did that in college. You know, he was a player that hunted for big plays. He was a player that, you know, would hold on to the ball a little bit too long. He would try to manufacture things when you're like, listen, man, just take the easy pass. Don't throw it into a committee meeting. Like, that happened, you know, at Miami. And there were interceptions dropped, or, you know, defenders just didn't make the most of those situations. And, you know, he benefited from the fact that in college football, like, guys can't always, you know, seize on the opportunity. I would ask you, Robbie, do you think the team was good enough around him last year to adequately look at him and judge, you know, where the needle's headed? Like, I think. Okay, so I'll let you answer it. Go ahead.
Well, here's what I would say. I don't think that. I don't subscribe to the theory that I think a lot of Titans fans around here subscribe to, which is everything around him has to be absolutely perfect, and then you can start evaluating. I'm not drafting a quarterback at number one if everything around him has to be absolutely perfect for him to elevate the team.
You wouldn't have the pick if that were the case, right? I mean, these guys exactly come into different degrees of bad situations at the very top of a draft.
Absolutely. That's right. I mean, it's not – you know, you can look at Cincinnati and we can say that Joe Burrow has been injury prone, but at the same time, has Joe Burrow's offensive line really ever been great? You know,
right?
Like he's had good skill position players. There's no doubt. I mean, there's absolutely surrounded with talent, but in front of him, have they helped him out? You know, realistically, have they? No. But do you still expect Joe Burrow, particularly once he signs the extension, to produce? Yeah, you do. You know, you expect him to produce. Like Trevor Lawrence is interesting because we've been waiting forever for him to be matched with. First, it was like, okay, why can't Trevor Lawrence just do it? You know, whoever he's with, whether it's Urban Meyer, or, I mean, you know, pick your poison with the coaching staff that's been around him, you know, during his totality of being in the NFL. But then, you know, you finally change the staff enough, the scheme enough, where you're like, oh, okay, well, now he's kind of starting to meet expectations. Well, you don't draft a quarterback going, well, now we gotta constantly change the coaching staff, you know, multiple times over his first 5 or 6, you know, 5 years to get this guy ultimately where he needs to be. That's not the goal when you draft a Cam Ward. Look, I'll just say, I think he deserves some grace, right? And I don't think things, Robbie, I don't think things have to be perfect around him. But even now, when I look at the depth chart, do I think Calvin Ridley and Wandale Robinson and, you know, Ayo Manor, you know, do I think that's, you know, Gunnar Helm? Am I like, hey, that's what I want him surrounded with? You know, Helm, let's see where he goes. Ayo Manor, let's see where he goes. I mean, Wandale Robinson, at this point, we know what he is, you know, in the NFL. But could he have a better piece, you know, than that at the skill position? You know, Tony Pollard, like, could he have better pieces around him? Yeah. And I think that's the goal, is just to improve some of the options that he has and not just expect. This idea that quarterbacks, you draft them number one overall and they just make everybody better, how many of those guys really realistically exist? I mean, let's look at Buffalo. Like, Josh Allen's been an MVP. how long have we been complaining, or not complaining, but how long have we been looking at the pieces around Josh Allen since Stephon Diggs goes out the door? Do you feel comfortable with what Josh Allen is throwing to Buffalo?
Don't.
Well, they don't feel comfortable with it. So if you're willing to feel that way with Josh Allen in Buffalo, why would you not be okay with saying Cam Ward, you know, needs some better pieces? I'm with you. I don't think it needs to be perfect. It doesn't have to be perfect. He has to be part of the solution. But I still think we're early on in this equation. And before we start fully judging who he can be, you got to get other, you know, guys in the door that are better than I'm sorry, but
so Jeremiah Love at four.
Like all due respect to Calvin Ridley, he needs a number one, right?
There's no doubt.
There's no question. You gotta resolve that.
No doubt.
Carls, great stuff as always. Your booming voice has echoed across Five Iron Golf here in Nashville. People are hitting golf shots, listening to the best NFL talk anywhere around. We appreciate your time as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
I appreciate it. And real quick before I go, I will tell you that I played a 12 and under league when I was 12, and I shot 120.
It's not bad. It's not bad for a 12-year-old.
Over nine holes.
Oh, well.
All right. Okay.
Didn't let you finish there.
That was it. I never played golf again. So that was the end of my my golf career. My mom dropped me off. I shot the worst round. I literally finished last out of like 100 kids, and I never played golf ever again. So that was it.
I wish I quit when I was 12. God, I'd be in a much better mood right now.
Good grief. Well, Charles, next time you come to Nashville, let's hit the links.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saved so much money, but, you know, therapy as well, I guess. All right, guys.
It's an amazing story. Charles, thank you, sir.
See ya.
Oh, man. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports with us every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock. We'll react to what Charles had to say. Luke Richardson for the Nashville Predators with us coming up at 8:45. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you. We are presented by Green Ventures Landscaping for homes and businesses that want to stand out, not blend in. Visit greenventureslandscaping.com. We're out today at Five Iron Golf in Midtown. We're going to be out here all day long on 102.5 The Game until 6 o'clock. It's Masters Thursday. It's a beautiful day out here in Nashville, Tennessee. Five Iron Golf now open in Midtown. Five Iron Golf, the perfect spot for golfers of all skill levels. Practice like a pro with TrackMan technology or play iconic courses without leaving town. After your round, enjoy chef-driven dishes, handcrafted cocktails, and a buzzing bar atmosphere. Whether you're hosting a party or improving your game, Five Iron Golf, here to redefine how Nashville plays golf indoors. Visit fiveirongolf.com. Again, that's fiveirongolf.com. to book your experience today. And again, we'll be out here all day long. So today out here, tomorrow out here, come on out and hang out with us at Five Iron Golf. Appreciate Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports for being with us in the last segment, Joe. It was interesting to get his breakdown of Dallas, what they could do in the draft, and then Cam Ward there on that last break. Look, I would agree. Like, nobody's asking for, like, a referendum on Cam Ward right now. Like, I'm not trying to say that you have to determine if he's your franchise quarterback or not right now. I just push back against the idea of, well, the weapons around him aren't adequate. Like, they're not good enough. So, like, he has no responsibility in this whatsoever. Like, it's the number one pick in the NFL draft that we're talking about.
Yeah.
You need to see him improve and carry some people along with him. Otherwise, right. Why are you picking him number one?
Right. Charles made the point about Buffalo and Josh Allen, and it's very true. There has been a lot of concern, and they haven't done a good enough job around him. But, again, we still see what Josh Allen is, right? I mean, that's the counterpoint to that is, like, Joe Burrow, terrible offensive line, got his ACL torn right away, basically, in the NFL. And yet, how long did it take to see what Joe Burrow was? And people are on different timelines. If they weren't on different timelines, we wouldn't have all these retread quarterbacks doing great things in their second teams.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and again, that's probably an argument the other way of,
yeah,
like, you know, take your time evaluating the quarterback.
You got to be
like,
sure.
You don't have to
as
come,
sure as you can be.
As sure as you can be. Like, take your time evaluating the quarterback, and that's both ways. Like, you don't, you know, I think C.J. Stroud right now is a good example of, you don't necessarily need to anoint someone after their first year of pretty good production in the NFL. And, you know, some of these other quarterbacks that we've seen, whether it's Darnold or Mayfield or whoever, that have gone on to second stops and have played really well, sometimes you make these determinations just too early, right? So, I don't know. I'm just saying with Cam Ward, I'm optimistic with how he played at the end of last year that he's starting to figure some stuff out. We'll see what they do in the draft, what those weapons look like. I mean, more than anything, we probably don't talk about this enough. I've got a lot more trust in Brian Daboll than I ever had in Brian Callahan. So, you know, how's that going to play out in terms of wins and losses? I don't know. I would hope that plays out for his quarterback development pretty well in terms of the Daboll part of this, who has demonstrated the ability to do it and do it not only for a long period of time, but do it at a high level with guys that he directly worked with, that he directly coached, not that he was in the same room of. Like, all that makes me feel good about it.
Yeah. And so from that perspective, I think you could argue that the Titans have done well by Cam Ward there. And especially the part of – well, maybe not especially, but the part of it that is also important is that Daboll, you know, actually liked him as a prospect. That's verified. This is not like, well, I guess I'll take that job even though I don't necessarily like that quarterback, but I'm going to take an OC job. I mean, this is a guy I tried to trade up to get. So, he may think differently of him after that year of film. You know, I don't know, yeah. But you hear him talk about him, and I think he clearly thinks he can get some things done with him.
Would you give C.J. Stroud a long-term extension this offseason if you're the Texans?
No, I wouldn't. And so they're going to do the option, and obviously that's the half measure. It's what the Titans did with Marcus Mariota. But I think that's – you take advantage of that, the ability to do that. I think you have to. There's other things that have gone on there. They've sacrificed an OC already, at least one. And they've had good weapons around him, a great defense, which is a great friend of a quarterback.
Sure.
And not a good offensive line. They have not had a good offensive line. They've had issues there. So, again, that's that's way more common than not in the NFL, that there's some level of issue with a team's offensive line. But I'm giving it another year. I don't know. I don't know what to think. It seems like maybe he just sort of plateaued a little bit as a player, you know. But the thing is, it's like, you know, you still get into – I mean, I still think there were some performances last year where you're like, oh, yeah, that's what you're looking for. So you can always – it can always be worse. That's the thing. It's like that argument of – yeah, maybe he's not what we thought he was going to be when he was a rookie, but I promise you it can be worse.
Well, the good news is if it doesn't work out, you got Davis Mills, and he can extend the window a little bit, you know?
There you go.
Kind of rise up to the occasion.
Yes, yes. Outstanding.
We saw him do it last year.
You did.
We saw him do it. I think he went 3-0
didn't
as
have
a starter.
Yeah, didn't have to crane your neck to see it.
Didn't have
right
to see
there
it.
In front
it was
of
right
it.
There in front of you. Clear view. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Predators assistant coach Luke Richardson will be with us coming up next. It's a massive game for the Preds tonight, their final road game of the year, taking on the Utah Mammoth, who is in front of them in the standings for wild card one. And the Predators trying to hold off the L.A. Kings and the San Jose Sharks, who are both behind it. We'll talk to Luke Richardson coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Preds in action tonight, their final road game of the regular season, taking on the Utah Mammoth. And to help us talk more about that, we head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Preds assistant coach Luke Richardson to the program, brought to you by Arrow Exterminators, going beyond the call. Arrow Exterminators, a proud partner with the Nashville Predators. Luke, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Doing awesome, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. Luke, it's been a really fun road trip to watch so far for you guys. Obviously, another big one tonight. But just the way your team has played, the way your team has responded on this road trip, I guess what has stood out maybe the most to you watching it from behind the bench?
Yeah, you know, I think the coaching staff talked about it a lot. We really are impressed with our leadership group. You know, it starts with your captains and your veteran guys, and we have guys that are out there every night pushing, playing the right way, blocking shots, doing all the hard stuff, and then it brings the young guys along. You have that togetherness, and it's the perfect time of the year for it. So we really appreciate the effort and that leadership role from our guys, like, you know, starting with Roman and You know, obviously O'Reilly, Stamkos, Phil, and especially guys like Eric Halla that have come back in into the Preds organization this year and given us a lot.
How challenging has this been, Luke? You just, you know, keep part of the year. You guys are gone for so long. Even, you know, go to one part of California, go back to the other, then come back to the other part of California. You're all over the place, but obviously you guys have played well. How difficult has it been to perform like this under the circumstances?
Yeah, you know what? There's definitely challenges when you look at it visually at the schedule. But that's, again, I think a good, you know, thing that the coaches have relied on, that leadership, and I can't say enough about it. Keeping the room, timeouts on the bench, keeping the guys engaged the right way. Doesn't matter what the situation, what the schedule, what the score is. They've really led the way in that, and it just gets the guys focused and playing what the coaching staff's asking them to do. But they're the ones going out there and doing it and keeping tabs on everything. So, we really count on the veteran guys, especially this time of the year.
So, Luke, I mean, it's unbelievable performance from Onanen the other night. You know, 43 saves, including, you know, for the first half of the game, he made just unbelievable save after unbelievable save in that game. What did you think of his performance in that moment in a game you guys needed to have your backup goalie stepping up and playing the way that he did?
Yeah, you know what? Since our team has really turned it around, we've had stellar goaltending all year, but especially Big Juice. I think after the first couple of games of the year, he has been basically getting better and better, and now he's lights out right now. And even in practice, he looks confident, and that makes everybody play and feel confident in front of him. I think it gives everybody. You know, not that we're taking it easy and giving up these big chances on purpose. It just, I think we know that when we're in a penalty kill situation, or we see a line rush coming down the ice with the other team's top line, we're feeling pretty confident right now back there with both of our goaltenders. But Big Juice the other night, he stood on his head from start to finish, and it really let us settle into our game and get going and get the lead and keep that lead on the road, which is important.
What would it mean to this team, Luke, and this coaching staff, if you guys can get to the end, get into the playoffs after everything that's happened this year?
Yeah, I think, you know, they have a lot of belief in themselves right now in that dress room, and we do as well as coaches. And, you know, we just think that they deserve it. But, you know, we had a lot of catching up to do, and we did a really good job in the middle of part of the season working and playing those hard stretches of games before and after the Olympic break. And I think it put us in a good position right now. We're in the fight with four or five teams, and we like our team right now. So it would—I think a lot of teams wouldn't be happy to be playing us in the first round. So it'd be really nice to get in there and cause some havoc.
Luke, what do you think of the way that LaRue specifically, his game is kind of ascending right now with not the hard style that he plays, but also the offense starting to come along as well? What have you thought of the way that he's played?
Yeah, you know, he gives us a jolt of energy. You know, he's a spirited guy, fiery. Sometimes you always got to control that with a young player and get them to really manage that when they should get a little extra fiery out on the ice in a game like that's really tight this time of the year. But he's doing a really good job managing that. And, you know, not only does he bring that spirit, but he's got some speed. He's got some skill to go along with that. He's helped out on the penalty kill. He's not afraid to block a shot, and those are all important intangibles this time of the year. You know, young guys, sometimes they do have to go back, take a step back and work at their game, and I think he really did that this year, and it's really showing now, so good on him.
Luke, last thing for you here. I mean, obviously it's a critical game tonight. It's a team in Utah that's right in front of you in the standings, and a team that is, as you know, very young, very talented, very skilled. So what's kind of your message? What do you think the game plan needs to look like for you guys tonight to come out of Utah with another win?
Yeah, the coaches, we feel like we're a broken record right now with the players. But, you know, I think Bruno's done a great job of relaying that message to the players. And, you know, and pushing them and having them push themselves. And what it is we just need to be skating. I thought we skated really well last game against a good rush team in Anaheim. And we're going to have to do the same again here tonight in Utah. A really good, like you said, skilled rush team. staying out of the penalty box. So I think moving our feet and checking with our legs, not our sticks, are going to take some of those extra penalties out of the equation, which we do not want to get in trade chances on power plays with this team. We want to play a good 5-on-5 game, use our feet, check as well as we have. And, you know, obviously we're always relying on our good goaltending. So we put that combination together. It gives us a good chance to win on the road.
Well, Luke, it's going to be fun to watch. Appreciate so much you taking time to be with us this morning, and good luck coming up tonight against Utah.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Preds in action tonight, taking on the Utah Mammoth. They got the Mammoth tonight. They're back home Saturday for an afternoon matinee against the Minnesota Wild. And then two home games next week, and that's it. That's all she wrote for the Predators in the regular season. So we are 100% in crunch time right now. We'll have you covered for all of it tomorrow here on Robbie and Rex Road. That's going to do it for us today here on the program. We're out at Five Iron Golf all day long. All of our shows will be out here, so come on out. We'll be out here all day today, all day tomorrow as well. Enjoy the Masters. Enjoy the transfer portal action that's going on. And, of course, the hockey coming up tonight. And we will be back to discuss it all tomorrow. Next man up with Jake Lyman is coming up next. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.